It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The opioid epidemic has police officers facing a number of potentially dangerous drugs on the street. Recently, emergency responders found an overdose victim in Bloomington who used heroin mixed with carfentanil, which can be easily absorbed on contact. A team of Illinois State University researchers has received a nearly $300,000 grant from the National Institute of Justice to continue work on a device for on-site testing of drugs with a level of accuracy currently only available in laboratories. For a closer look at the science, WGLT's Colleen Reynolds sat down with chemistry professors June Hun and Kim and Jeremy Driscoll.
So the original grant was actually awarded to our colleague, Dr. Mulligan and Dr. Whelan, and they focused on developing an instrument to identify drugs with a portable on-site capabilities. And the new push is to integrate an additional technique so that we can use two completely independent techniques on-site for identification. And that has big implications as far as the evidence being admissible for court requires two independent approaches to identify drugs rather than one.
As I understand it, there is a second sort of technology that will serve as a check on the first.
Yes, actually, each technology has already been fairly well established, and portable capabilities are already available to researchers and law enforcement communities. But each one right now operates independently. So there is a single instrument that is used for one technology or one technique, and a completely different instrument that is used for the other technology. Each one of them have been established as being very informative in terms of identifying drugs. In fact, they're both classified as category A, which is the best, most accurate technique. But again, it's really recommended to properly identify with high accuracy two independent methods in order for it to be upheld in a court of law. So what we're really trying to do is take these two established technologies that have already proven themselves independently and basically put them together, integrate them on to one system, one instrument, and so we can simultaneously basically do both techniques at the same time to independently get hopefully the same answer in terms of identification. And if we have two independent identifications, then it's much more accurate in terms of identifying and holding up in a court of law.
Professor Kim, if you describe the spectrometer, it's not very big.
Right. The previous project was basically using paper type materials and swapping on the surface to detect drug molecules. And we are incorporating nanoscale materials onto it. By doing it, we can increase the surface area. By doing it, we can have more drug molecules can be adsorbed on the surface. And then that substrate can be utilized with the two techniques at the same time.
So, Professor Driscoll, I'm trying to,
right,
for the average person who doesn't understand,
sure,
chemistry.
It turns out for the second technique that we're using, called Raman spectroscopy, it takes a much higher concentration or a lot more of the chemical in order to detect it. And so by using Dr. Kim's approach to basically load these nanomaterials, nanoparticles, onto the paper, we're not making the paper necessarily any bigger in terms of its area or what we're handling, but if you zoom in very close, the surface area is much greater than the paper by itself. So there's more locations, more surface for those molecules to adsorb onto. And gold nanoparticles or silver nanoparticles that Dr. Kim is working with also have some other properties that will enhance the signature, enhance the signal that we detect using Raman spectroscopy, that second technique. So now, not only do we have more molecules on that swab, it actually acts to enhance the signal so that we can detect smaller amounts of material.
Simply, you can think about packing a materials in a small surface, I mean, in a jar, for example, packing a sand versus a rock. You can pack more stuff with the sand. That's kind of idea of using that surface.
There are some simple handheld drug field tests that are out there, but now that we're getting into all of this synthetic opioids and the mixing of heroin with other types of synthetics, I'm guessing the sooner police know they're dealing with, the better, Professor Driscoll?
That's absolutely true. And a lot of those field tests that you're talking about, or you referred to, they are active toward a particular class of compound. So there's not a lot of specificity involved with that. So similar molecules could both result in a positive, or if there's a slight structural change, a lot of the new synthetic drugs, if there's a slight structural change, it may lead to a false negative. The current field tests are primary screening to send it back to the lab for further testing. But the techniques that we're developing, ideally, they will provide the specificity and the sensitivity that it won't require transportation back to a reference lab. We can do all of it right there on site.
So does the Department of Justice give you parameters as you look for accuracy of the tests with this particular device?
They have not defined that. At this point in the research, it's really about establishing what our capabilities are before we decide whether or not it provides the accuracy that's required for legal purposes. So at this point, we're just exploring what our accuracy is. I can tell you that for the Raman spectroscopy that I mentioned that it's already independently been validated, it's accuracy is a little over 97% for the drug molecules that have been tested based on other NIJ-funded research. And I think the mass spec is slightly better than that because it can typically detect lower levels of material. When we add the nanoparticles in there, we hope that we can improve that accuracy even greater than 97%. And then when we combine both techniques together, we have two completely independent methods of identifying a chemical, the accuracy can probably go up from there.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Colleen Reynolds, talking with Illinois State University chemistry faculty members Jeremy Driscoll and Joon-Hung Kim, who are using a nearly $300,000 grant from the National Institute of Justice to come up with a device that will better identify suspicious substances at crime scenes, so much so that they might not ever need to send it off to a lab. Are there other uses for this kind of a device beyond law enforcement?
I would say absolutely. The technology, again, independently, each of these techniques have already been used for military operations, explosives detection, those sorts of uses. And again, if we can combine two techniques, that would just increase the accuracy of detection in those sorts of applications as well.
Professor Kim, the other part of the equation is not only admissibility in court, but if you're going to have a law enforcement application, it's also going to be cost. Are you including that within your research?
Right. The material that we're thinking about designing is really cheap because everything is paper-based. The paper is also made out of cellulose. And also, we are thinking about using a polymer-based nanofiber systems, which is just the price of a cellulose range. So we're, in terms of cost-wise, we don't really have to worry about just compared to the conventional substrate.
Would that include recycled paper then?
Recycled paper, that's correct.
In taking a look at the spectrometer device that is widely used and widely available, it does seem to be kind of clunky, and it almost looks like something that belongs in the Smithsonian. Do you see this as something that police departments would easily be able to transport, and you envision it eventually getting smaller like all technology, Professor Driscoll?
Yeah, I think we can always think about our instruments shrinking as we move forward. In its current version, the instrument, the size is limited by the mass spectrometer. So the mass spectrometer, which was funded in the original grant, it weighs 90-something pounds, but it's easily loaded in the back of a pickup or a van. The Raman spectrometer, they're less than a pound, so they will be easily added on the front end of a mass spec and very little difference in the overall size or weight of the instrument.
Will they operate independently?
So they will operate independently from one another, but they will be on the same frame. The Raman spectroscopy requires shining a laser on the sample, and the mass spec requires turning on a potential or a voltage. We hope that we can do both of these things at the same time, but we're also have the capabilities of doing one followed by the other for sequential analysis, but either way it should still be pretty rapid.
Where do you begin with all of this?
Since Dr. Mulligan has established the portable mass spec in a previous grant, I think a lot of the initial research is going to be in Dr. Kim's lab with fabricating these nanoparticles and loading them onto the paper. And then in my lab, our students are working on applying drug molecules, swabbing them with these nanoparticles nanoparticle-embedded papers to see what levels of detection we get. So in other words, what's the smallest amount of material that we can detect using the Raman spectroscopy, or technique number two. We also need to make sure that we make the papers, that we're fabricating them in-house in our research labs, that we can make them reproducibly and get similar results each time that we produce these papers.
Students are really getting an interesting experience with this kind of research. This is high-level stuff.
Yeah, this is a wonderful experience. We have some master students working on this, as well as undergraduate students, and they're involved in all phases of this, from the initial synthesis of nanoparticles in Dr. Kim's lab, to collecting data, to analyzing data and statistics, but then they, going back to making it exciting, I mean, I think that the end goal and getting to see their work result in identifying these drug molecules, I think that's a big motivating factor for the students as well.
So if some of these are illicit drugs, you have to be very careful with how that's handled.
All of the drugs that we do have in our research labs, they're locked down, so very limited access to those.
And then a final question, and that is, at some point, do you take your prototype and deploy it for testing in the real world using some of our local law enforcement agencies?
Yes, that was actually part of the original grant. I did do some field testing. Dr. Mulligan has some contacts with local law enforcement, so they did do some analysis of some real crime scenes, some evidence that had been collected. And so I would imagine as we start developing and gathering data and testing out our instruments that we develop in lab, that we will kind of end the same sort of approach, trying to test this out on real field samples.
Professor Driscoll, Professor Kim, thank you so much for filling us in on the exciting research going on at Illinois State University. I'm Colleen Reynolds.
The research is a team effort involving faculty and students from ISU's business and chemistry departments. A final phase of research using another grant will involve creating a library of identified drugs and easy-to-use software for officers at scenes to use as they test chemicals that are matched against a periodically updated database of illegal drugs or hazardous substances. You're listening to Sound Ideas.